Ben Fred Fridays and our postseason coverage on Scoops with Danny Mac is brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in both Missouri and Illinois. It's state, federal, municipal courts, and in addition to their criminal defense practice, they also assist people facing orders of protection, probation violations, sanctions by the nursing board, discipline by a college or university for your son or daughter. So they handle just about everything. Head to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. stlcriminaldefense.com. They're available 24/7, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Well, Ben, not really an eventful game, number one. You know, just kind of a ho-hum. No big deal. Playoff baseball, yeah. Right?
That was totally boring. Hard to stay awake for, Danny.
No.
I mean, could you ask for anything else? I mean, my God, you had fireworks, you had intrigue, you had some mistakes that guys had to bounce back from, and then what theater there to end the game with Carlos Martinez doing his thing as he does best, making everybody chew through their fingernails before he gets the job done. But, man, huge win. I mean, it's hard to overstate that, to have one in the bag on the road with Jack Flaherty not having pitched yet. The Cardinals are in a pretty good spot after that 7-6 win.
I'm going to start with the first inning, and we'll dive into all the issues that you're talking about here. But Miles Michaelis had 32 walks and 32 starts this year. He had two in the first inning. Then you had Colton Wong, by certain metrics, rated as the third best second baseman defensively in all of baseball. I was looking at these numbers. He made 396 out of 403 chances of what they call certain, almost certain chances. And that's any chance that has a play probability of 90 to 100%. He makes an error. And I'm thinking this first inning is not Cardinal baseball of 2019. But Michaelis, to his credit, settled in. They kept the crowd out of it for the most part. Not the whole time, but for the most part. It was a rambunctious crowd. It could have gone a lot of different ways after that first inning, but give them credit. They settled in and kept it a ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, Miles really buckled down. And I mean, to the point that, you know, they were calling the bullpen and had guys up in that first inning. He went, okay, how's this going to turn out? He's sweating. It's hot there. And then you have, you know, the defense that really is the reason the Cardinals there. I mean, we spent this entire, you know, September talking about run suppression. Here's how the Cardinals were going to have to survive in the playoffs, and they're just going to have to choke teams out defensively. And then Colton makes a completely un-Colton-like play. Now, some of that might be a little bit of rust, Dan. I mean, he hasn't played much, and he's not quite right. He's right enough to be out there, and I think he's right enough to be in the lineup. We saw that he can still swing the bat, but if you watched him run, getting tagged out at home by a wide margin, he's not himself in terms of his speed and probably his range. So he's also learning the abilities of what he can do out there under this kind of limited, somewhat limited frame. So I think some of that's also jitters. I mean, you got a lot of guys in this infield, Dan, that haven't been here before. I mean, the whole left side of that infield had never been in a postseason game before. And then throw in Marcell Ozuna in the outfield as well. So I think you saw some jitters. I think you saw some guys have to take a deep breath, but once the Cardinals did that, then they settled in pretty nice.
Absolutely. I had said on our post game on Fox Sports Midwest last night that I thought Matt Carpenter had the biggest hit of the regular season with his home run off of Kimbrel against the Cubs at Wrigley, and I thought last night his hit may have been the biggest hit of that game. There was a bunch of them, but that was a big one.
Absolutely. And how about the ones that just we were within, you know, a couple inches of being foul. I mean, talk about a game of inches. You know, the Marcell Ozuna hit down the left baseline, Colton Wong's hit down the right. I mean, these were hits that were, you know, you were leaning forward trying to see were they fair or foul, and that's what can flip a game. I mean, Matt Carpenter's, I agree with you, biggest hit of the game, but it almost looked like it was a shot out of a sand pit. I mean, it was just kind of this weird blue pit. And then, of course, you have Paul Goldschmidt, who there was nothing weird about that. I mean, I think he nearly broke Charlie uh, Charlie Marlowe's hand out there in the outfield seats. But they had a combination of it all, Dan. I mean, that's what jumped out to me is you look at the box score and everybody was doing something. We've talked so much about what happens when the first four of this offense doesn't get going. Well, Dexter Fowler, he makes an outstanding play on the bases. You know, that rope-a-dope going around second base is a veteran move, and he saved it for exactly the right time, and he executed it brilliantly. He's on the board. You have Tommy Edman with two hits. He comes back and makes up for, you know, what certainly, you know, disappointed him, that play that could have been made. I think they took it away from being an error, but when a ball hits you in the chest, you feel like you got to make it. Ozuna had two hits. Yadi goes hitless, and then DeYoung picks him up with two hits. Colton Wong has two hits. I mean, the offense was not the issue in this game, and I think that bodes well for the Cardinals in this series. They're an offense that we've seen when they can catch a rhythm, when they can catch a run, they'll produce runs for a while. And they don't always have it, but they do kind of do it in Jags, and that was a perfect time to be on one. So I saw that as a really positive sign. And the other thing I saw, too, was I just saw a game that gave a lot of guys – maybe a rough break here and there, and then gave them opportunities to make up for it, and they did. Tommy Edman, you know, lets that ball get away from him and then comes up with a big hit later. Paul Goldschmidt, that certainly was not an error, that ball that jumped over his head on the one hop, but, you know, he wanted to get to it and wish he would have gotten to it. And he makes, one of the best stretches you'll see to make an out at first base later in the game. I mean, you just saw guys who had said, hey, I wish I could have had that play back. And then they went out and made another play that made up for it. And I think you saw a team that said, okay, we belong here, and we're going to start acting like it. And the Braves kind of did the opposite. I mean, base running errors. Ronald Acuna Jr. is a great player, but he ran the bases very poorly in that game. It cost him when he thought that ball was gone, and it wasn't. Trying to steal on Yadier Molina in the first inning when you kind of had Miles Michaelis on the ropes, I thought that was a really bizarre decision. The Braves did not take advantage of every opportunity, and it ended up costing them.
Yeah, Brian Snicker said afterwards that Acuna in the first inning, that he had the green light, went on his own. Carpenter, by the way, had been 2-for-18 against Melanson, who wound up throwing 28 pitches in the game last night. First to third, you mentioned the Fowler play, and this is where I think it separated the Cardinals from the Braves in that game. Couple things. One was the play by Fowler, first to third. Cardinals went 87 times first to third, and like you said, appropriately, rope-a-dope, and it was a great play by Dexter Fowler. The non-base running by Acuna cost them. Fowler's base running helped them. And then in the ninth inning, a team that's been defined by defense in 2019, Paul Goldschmidt comes up with the stretch of the night and the pick of the night. And when you add those things together, it means a win. I just thought Acuna's decision not to run after he had been through this before earlier this year was awful. And then when Chris Martin gets hurt, you could kind of feel, you know, all of a sudden the momentum, which was at the grasp and in the hands of Atlanta, it shifted. And it allowed that door to creak, you know, open just a little bit. And the Cardinals took advantage of it with all those different facets.
Yeah, and then as soon as that opening is there, then you're dealing with a team that, oh, we haven't won a game one, and it's been so long since we've done this. And, you know, then those things kind of start to snowball. And I think the Cardinals have players that they've got a good mix. They've got a good mix of players who have been there and know what it takes, and they've got a good mix of guys who have won in the minor league levels and know what it takes to win a championship down there, and some guys who don't know any better, which can be a good thing. And then they've got a manager who, I mean, Mike Schilt had a plan, and you saw it from, you know, the moment the game started. Everything he did was with conviction. There was never any, you never saw a shot of him wondering or searching, what's he going to do? And I thought a moment that was telling was when he was sending his pinch hitters up and he was mad, or he was making his pitching changes, and he was mad that Snicker hadn't sent up their pinch hitter yet. Because, you know, you'd see Schilt over the dugout kind of basically tapping his foot, like, let's go, let's go. He knew what he wanted to do, and he knew how he wanted to respond to the Braves when they decided what they wanted to do. He had it scripted. And you might not always agree with the decisions that he made, but I think one he made in the ninth was a big deal. a lot of people, if you had a button in your living room watching that game, and it would have been the eject Carlos Martinez from the ninth inning button to bring in Dakota Hudson or to go to somebody else to try to get out of that game as that score was getting closer after Ronald Acuna Jr. hit one of the moon, they would have done it. And I think by sticking with Carlos, now you've got a Carlos Martinez who is alert, awake, and I think, you know, he's got a bit of an edge now with this opponent too, and that's a good thing. Fired up Carlos usually fares pretty well for the Cardinals, and I think he was a little ticked off with the way the Braves maybe handled some of their celebrating there in the ninth, and people can hem and haw over whether that's right or wrong. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I think a little drama is good for the game. But having a locked-in Carlos who knows that his manager trusts him in the first game of the postseason, I think that could be a pretty good thing.
Absolutely, and I think that's part of the decision-making. Now, what concerns you is that seventh inning or later, the Braves have hit 97 home runs going into that game yesterday, which is most in baseball. Clearly, Martinez has got to be sharper. I'm going to get into game two here momentarily. Again, this is brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty. I am curious, though, what you thought of Acuna with his trot off the home run off Martinez, his comments afterwards. A lot of people talking about what took place after the game.
Yeah, I've got no problem with the trot, and I've got no problem with Carlos's comment. I mean, look, it doesn't bother me to hear a guy say, look, I want rookies to respect veterans. And for some reason, you know, this conversation, especially when it applies to the Cardinals, it really bothers people. I mean, people, I think it stirs up all these memories of people disliking Tony La Russa and the way the Cardinals played and yada, yada, yada. The Cardinals have always been their best when they've had an edge, when they've ticked off other teams. So if this is a sign of that, then it's only a good thing for the Cardinals. I will say this, it's a little ironic to hear Carlos Martinez talking about, you know, wanting the older players to be respected, because Carlos Martinez used to be that young guy who ticked off older players, and now he's kind of jumped the gap here. So I think what Carlos probably should have said was, look, I was mad that I gave up a massive home run, and that's really what he was mad about. But if he wants to bark at a guy who did a little sidestep around third base as a closer, then I'm good with that. I mean, have a mentality, own the mound, and get fired up. Preferably, don't give up the home run in the first place. But it does create a little bit of drama, a little intrigue to this series, because I imagine that that won't be the last time that we see some chatter.
I thought it was interesting after the game that Carlos Martinez and Yadier Molina did their usual congrats to one another on the field, and Carlos kind of turned toward the Braves dugout as if he wanted to continue the conversation, and Yadi immediately grabbed him and said, you know, you're not doing that. Let's get off the field. So, you know, I think Yadi understood there's a lot more games to be played in this thing. Probably also understood Carlos didn't pitch very well, so that was not the moment to go over and chat. But I think that's a storyline that will be interesting to watch moving forward. He's going to get more opportunities to face Acuna, and how Carlos responds, that he's going to need to pitch better. That performance that he had tonight will get them beat. He was lucky to have such a cushion. But we also know that he gets better as he gets closer to the wall. I mean, he pitches his best when he's backed into a corner. And you almost, as soon as they got that big lead, you kind of had to wonder how close could this get? Because Carlos, while he's been extremely effective in save situations since Jordan Hicks got hurt, he does seem to use up every single bit of cushion before he gets the job done.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. and it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I think it's now, you know, as we look ahead to today's game number two, interesting to see Martinez, if need be, to go back-to-back. Now, he's had 18 different times this year. He pitched in back-to-back games, a 2.76 ERA, 16 and a third inning, 16 strikeouts. And as we've seen, Mike Schilt is not shy about going to him in back-to-back games. I do think that that'll be a sidebar to see what happens in game two. You got Flaherty going, but if you need to go to Carlos Martinez and how he responds.
Absolutely, yeah. How does he respond? How is his workload going to be handled? You had to go to him, you know, more than an inning. And that's something they're not afraid to do, but that starts to add up pretty quick. I think ideally, in game two, they would like to hand it to Jack and then maybe have Carlos be the only other guy who touches it. We'll see how good Flaherty looks against these Braves hitters. I mean, there's no reason to expect him not to just continue what he's done. I don't think that Jack's the kind of guy that's going to be influenced or altered by this postseason stage. I think we have basically seen the same guy, Dan, since that start before the All-Star break. And there's been moments when he's been a little more on than others, but we haven't seen him be bad and we haven't seen him look rattled once. And he's going to be, I think, in rare form for this one. I thought it was interesting that we saw him today sending out Bob Gibson highlights, which is usually a good thing for a guy to be watching before he goes out and makes his postseason start. So, you know, he can help the bullpen quite a bit here if he goes out and pitches up to his capabilities. And he's going to have a Braves lineup that is ready for the challenge. I think we learned something in game one, and that it's Freddie Freeman. That elbow, it might be barking at him, but he's powering through it, and his power is still very much there. And that's something that I had a question going into this series. He had not hit well entering this series, and his power had been way down since they kind of diagnosed him with that elbow spur. But either something's fixed, or he's got a shot, or that adrenaline's just pumping through him because he's hitting baseballs hard.
What would you expect out of Flaherty making his first ever playoff start today?
I don't expect anything but greatness. We've seen a full half season of this. We've talked a lot about how he has the third best second half ERA ever. And what we don't talk about enough is that the guys who did that before him, they were all way more experienced and older than he was. Jake Arrieta was in his sixth full season, maybe seventh. Then Greg Maddux was deep, not deep into his career, but he had a few chapters beneath his belt. Jack Flaherty's 23 years old, and he's in his third full season in the majors. This guy is special, Dan. And as Colton Wong told me before the team left to go to Atlanta, they've stopped looking at him as a young player. They look at him as a veteran because of how he conducts himself, because of his talent and his ability to reach that potential consistently. And also because of his just character and his work ethic. So, yeah, you don't know how a guy's going to respond on that stage until he gets there, and this will be his postseason debut. But I expect him to be locked in, and I expect him to be, you know, there for multiple innings, and I expect Mike Schilt to ride him. I think you're to the point now where if he has some hiccups, you say, hey, let him get a chance to work himself out of it because he's the best pitcher that you have on your team. And you want him to go as long as you can within reason.
Absolutely. I just felt like after the jitters were done from the first or second inning, that and it probably does get reflected on the other players too, but these guys that didn't have much postseason experience, I think there was 9 total for the Cardinals. Some have great numbers, like Yachty, I think it was his 90th postseason game. But you're talking about getting through that first
I don't know, inning or two, and then you just kind of settle in. And I wonder if that'll be the case today.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, get one under your belt and realize what they've told themselves is true. It's just baseball. And that's what Mike Schilt has talked about. He's like, he's managed postseason games in the minors. And he told a great story recently about how Tony La Russa came down to surprise him for one of the Texas League playoff runs. And they went out to dinner. And Mike said something along the lines of, yeah, I know it's not the bigs, but this is a lot. And Tony said, look, don't minimize your experience and don't trivialize it because it's not the majors. It's the same at the majors. It's just a lot more people watching. And it's easy to say that, but it's another thing to go out there and learn it. And I think we saw guys like Tommy Edman and even Paul DeJong. I mean, you forget, Dan, how few of guys on this team have played in the postseason. And that's what, over the years, that those guys who were just kind of, it seemed like they were just born into the postseason, that stopped. And now, you know, if you look at the number of guys that are on this team that have been to the postseason as Cardinals before, you're talking about six guys. And everybody else has either been there with somebody else or not been there at all. And so it's going to take Paul DeJong, you know, a moment, an inning to see what that feels like. It's going to take Tommy Edman. It's going to take Marcelo Ozuna. I think we should touch on that, too. I mean, his performance in that game was huge because now you have Marcelo Ozuna feeling good. You take the final game of the season, game 162, you take what he did in this game in game one against the Braves. He's a streaky hitter. We know that about him. But he's in a groove right now, and that's the kind of bat that can lead you on a postseason run here. If he and Goldschmidt hit, they win. It's been that way all season. We haven't seen them do it much together, but if they can do that now, then this Cardinals team is not going to be one that we're wondering about the offense. But, I mean, even the pitchers. I mean, John Brebbia has never done it. You have all these guys who have never been at this level, and I do think game one was a little bit of a trial by fire. And to get a win in that game was huge because now you have some confidence, you have some breathing room, and you can also look forward and go, oh, by the way, we've got Jack Flaherty starting twice in the series if it gets to five, and we've got one win in hand. That's a pretty good spot to be in.
I know a lot of folks come on these podcasts on Fridays to get your thoughts on Mizzou. Mizzou's got a game this weekend against Troy. Just your thoughts on another game in Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah, it won't be the most talked about Missouri game of the season for a lot of different reasons. One, because of what the Cardinals have going on. Another, because the Blues are underway. And in the third, because the opponent. But Troy has taught Missouri in the past that it's not to be overlooked. It has a win against Missouri on its list of teams that it's knocked off in not so distant years. Barry Odom was on that staff of the Gary Pinkel coach team that lost to Troy, so he won't be taking it lightly. The thing to watch in this game, Dan, is Troy's offense. They are a team that moves the ball around. They spread it out. They score a lot of points. They're 2-2 entering this game, but they have scored, you know, they have scored points in every game against every opponent. They have a senior quarterback who likes to throw the ball. And to me, this will be a good test of this Missouri defense because we are starting to see in the week since Wyoming, the makings of what could be a very competent Barry Odom defense, the best defense that he's had since he's been a head coach, the kind of defense that got him a job as a head coach when he was the defensive coordinator. They're creating turnovers. They are creating pressure on quarterbacks, and they're forcing outstanding results in third down and red zone situations. They're not giving up big plays. They did that way too much at Wyoming, and they've buckled down on it since. So against a team that they should beat, but a team that has a dynamic offense that can roll up a lot of points, I'm eager to see what the defense can do and if it can kind of keep this good storyline going.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, There are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
How about the Blues opening night, raising the banner? Chills. What did you think?
It was awesome. I was fortunate enough to be there for it and gave it a shot at trying to convey what it kind of meant. And I talked to the players about, you know, what that banner means to them. And most of these guys, look, they want to focus on the season, and they're kind of tired, I think, of talking about the cup. And while they don't want to minimize what they did, they're still very much focused on trying to make this a run and not, you know, a victory lap from last year. And I totally get that. But Ryan O'Reilly said, look, you know, our story from last season is going to be used as an example, not just for us, but for any team. I mean, we were dead in the water, and everybody thought we were toast, and look where we ended up. And he said, so I think that banner represents that. It's like you're never done fighting until the final bell has rung. So I like that. I mean, that banner can hang above that sheet of ice and remind the Blues when they're down and out or something goes wrong that if they make the next right play and keep stacking them up, then things can work out better than you ever thought. And I think it can be, I mean, not to get too corny here, but I think it can be a reminder for a city. This hockey team is so intertwined with this city that I think its story is one of just, you know, dedication, of selflessness. When you look at how many guys became a key contributing piece of that championship run and one that you write your own destiny. I mean, that's what the Blues should represent. They had a coach that was mostly known for his YouTube highlights of punching people in the face as an old player. They had a goalie who was on the fourth string to start the season, didn't even get to start in the AHL game at the season opener a year ago. And they had guys who were written off and they were worst in the standings and in points. I mean, they were a team that was out of sorts. They had a coaching change, they had dysfunction, and they got together and they said, what if we put all of our talents together, and what if we play for each other and ignore everything else? And they made this remarkable, incredible run that will, you know, be talked about for years and years. And the other thing of seeing the banner go up, I think it did. It's kind of threw open the doors of the old haunted house of Blues misery and pain. I mean, that banner is basically like the lifting of a cross on a church. Like the bad mojo, it's gone now. Okay, we can talk about the past and the struggles and all the things that went wrong and the Blues' quest for a Stanley Cup, but those demons have been exorcised. And I think that's a thing for Doug Armstrong. He talked about that in Boston. He said, "Look, we're at a new, you know, this is uncharted water now. We're not carrying that baggage of the team that can never win the Cup. Now we can be the team that can defend the Cup. Now we can be the team that is one of the champions." And he's made moves that suggest that he's ready to go try to win it again. And I think it's just refreshing for this organization and its fans to not have to be looking over its shoulder anymore, waiting for the anvil to drop.
Absolutely. Well put. Ben, as always, great stuff. Should be fun today, and we'll catch up, I'm sure, before next week as well. But should be fun, game number two.
Yeah, sounds good, man. It's a fun conversation. I always learn something about the game when I'm talking with you, so hope fans do listen into this as well.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.